Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is poet and environmental activist Melissa Tuckey. Tuckey received her MFA from George Mason University. She is the author of an award-winning book of poems called Tenuous Chapel. It was selected by poet Charles Simic for ABZ Press's first book prize and published this year. Her work has appeared in many literary journals, including the Beloit Journal, Painted Bride Quarterly, and Poetry International. Tuckey has a background in environmental advocacy and is a founding member of Split This Rock, a national poetry organization that celebrates poetry of witness and provocation. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I want to talk to you about the fact that you've been an environmental activist and advocate, and did you start getting into writing in order to talk about these issues, or was it totally separate?
It's two tracks in my life. So, you know, in high school, I was a writer, and I slept with my books, with Emily Dickinson books, and, you know, and scribbled all my poems. And then I went to college, and then I tried to get serious and find a job, and I found my way into environmental work. And I did that for about 10 years. And somewhere along that path, I realized something was really missing for me, and it was writing and
being able to be creative.
Yeah, a more creative approach, and even to process what I was experiencing as an activist. I found I was writing grant proposals and press releases and organizing people and doing things like that, but there was a different voice that I needed to explore.
Well, I'm glad you found this poet's voice. But let's talk about this. This is a beautiful collection, Tenuous Chapel. Now, you say on your website blog that the book is a celebration of beauty, hope, and resilience in a time of war and despair. Talk to us more about that. This book doesn't sound like it came from that place. It seems more spiritual to me.
There is a spiritual dimension, I would say. I mean, for me, living in this time of, you know, environmental destruction and, you know, really massive change, and being an activist requires really a lot of wrestling with despair. And so, I mean, for me, the spiritual element, I guess I'm very interested in Buddhism as sort of a response, as a way to deal with that. Sort of, you know, we're all here temporarily and live fully in the moment and, you know.
Well, that reflects in the book. The title, Tenuous Chapel, you know, my first thought was it means faith in flux. You know?
Yeah.
What does it mean to you? What was the meaning?
I think that's a good response. You know, it's a broad, I like the tension between tenuous and chapel. And that's probably, you know, it created a space for the manuscript. And I feel like it touches into that search for faith, but it's not a religious or a secular faith. It's something that passes, that's passing quickly, and that we have to be present for.
Were you brought up in any kind of religion?
I was brought up as a Methodist, and I would say that's in here too. You know, there are some Christian, there's some Christian thinking.
So I would actually like to have you read a piece from Tenuous Chapel. This one's called Ghost Fishing in Louisiana.
Sure.
To tell us a little bit about it first.
So this poem comes out of my work as an environmentalist. I worked for 7 years for safe disposal of chemical weapons and in a national organization, and it was very intense. And I became involved in the environmental justice movement, and looking at how race and class affect environmental issues. And I went on a tour in Louisiana of toxic waste sites, which was very disturbing and just a powerful experience. I've never seen, there's really no place as polluted as Louisiana in this country.
And it's mostly in the poorer neighborhoods, correct?
And it's
I have a friend who lives there.
Mostly African American. And they're just getting away with murder. So this poem is a response to that experience. And I think, you know, poetry gives us access to some of that horror and emotional trauma of environmental destruction and other kinds of things in a way that other kinds of writing doesn't perhaps explore. So I'll read it. It has an epigraph from Reverend Willie T. Sneed. These people are in prison and there's poison loose. Ghost Fishing, Louisiana. These people are in prison and there's poison loose. That's not an ambulance. That's the sun going down in your rearview mirror. It gets in your clothes. It gets in the way you talk. And the thunder late at night, railroad cars full of poison bumping into one another. Gambling boats ghost fishing on Lake Charles. Sugar is refined here for sweet tea. Flour bleached white. Men selling melons the size of heads. Her house held the cancer like fish in a locked box.
Wow, that's great. I love that last line. Thanks. What does that term ghost fishing refer to? Is that a known term or something that came out of the poetry?
That just came out of an image. When we were on this tour, we went past Lake Charles, which is a lake that was so full of toxins, they drained it and had to refill it and try to rebuild it. And it's also a place where tourists go and go fishing, and there's casinos and and all that kind of craziness.
Lucinda Williams wrote a beautiful song about Lake Charles on one of her albums. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the Buddhism, though. I mean, the impermanence of things.
Right.
Is poetry trying to get to the bottom of impermanence, do you think?
I feel like, you know, poetry has a long tradition of looking at dealing with impermanence, you know, looking at death, looking at reminding us that we're temporary.
And that emotions are fleeing.
Everything is fleeing, mm-hmm. and helping us sink down in the moment and revel in it and be more aware, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like poetry is a more gentle way to talk about politics instead of bashing people in the head?
I feel like it's a very different way to talk about politics. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what's missing in politics is often the I statement, right? But also just there's so much abuse of language in politics. Mm. And poetry is really an art form where we care very much about language. And
we know the power of words.
And we know the power of words, and we see how it's abused. And, mm-hmm. you know, we also speak to people's personal experiences and not in vague generalities, which are dangerous, which are used mm-hmm. by politicians to start wars and get us to ignore important things. Mm-hmm. Poetry is really the opposite of that. I feel like it's important for its social engagement and ability to do that. And I also think other art forms contribute in similar ways.
Mm-hmm. But I want to have you read another from Tenuous Shovel. This one's called Time's Arrow. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Time's Arrow came from a art exhibit that I went to at the Freer Gallery by the artist Sugimoto, Japanese artist. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting, visceral experience because he's working with art of scale, so and also with antiques and really, really old artifacts and sort of what happens to them over time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it was one of those art exhibits that you leave and you feel like, and the name of his exhibit was Time's Arrow. You leave and you feel like you're, you know, the way you see the world has shifted.
Mm.
So that experience inspired. And some of the last image in the poem is from the exhibit. But I also had gone to see the exhibit at the time when we were bombing Iraq and in the beginning of that war and just thinking about destruction and artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
Time's Arrow. No one will remember the arsonist smoking a cigarette and laughing. The child will remember letters of the alphabet rising from flames, windows exploding, fire, a whistle. But who will listen to ash? How does history survive? The language of God in translation. Inside every mirrored locket, a portrait of the ocean.
Well, I love that. You know, that reminded me of one of Carolyn Forché's poems, you know, You know her, the poet?
Yeah, yeah, I love
the
her.
The Angel of History and yeah. all those lines about history and destruction and
yeah.
and history going up in smoke, in other words. Wow, I really like that poem.
Thank you.
That's
Thanks.
The first one I thought, ooh, I'm going to have this woman on my show.
Yay, thank you so much.
To tell us how you write, do you set aside time to write, or do you just, when something comes crackling through, do you run and write it down?
I do best when I'm disciplined, so I set aside time. I try to make a schedule. I work really hard on having a schedule. Also being involved with other writers and having a writing group and sharing and being inspired by their work. And I find I write a lot, but if I don't share it with someone, then I don't feel like I'm really writing.
Really?
I might think, ugh, you know, I'm not right. You know, it's just it's a really important part of the process for me to have.
And you don't mind sharing stuff in transition? You know, I mean, you know, stuff that isn't totally polished and ready for daylight.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a time when I don't want to share it, but then there's a time when it needs to be shared and it just needs to be pushed a little bit further and it needs to be recognized. Otherwise, on my computer, it's just part of a lot of stuff that's on the computer being ignored or lost or whatever.
Yeah, so. It seems like writers, especially poets, need to be with a group that they trust, though.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of people can try to ruin something that's beautiful because they might be jealous or envious or don't understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I think it's so important to find people that read you well and can respond in the way you're looking for and that works for you. And
yeah. So tell us what kind of environmental issues you're involved in here in Ithaca.
In Ithaca, so I've been here 3 years, so I'm not fully entrenched yet in the activist world, but I am very concerned about fracking, and I've been to Albany a couple times on that, and I just think that's the issue. I feel fortunate to live here where we have people who are so talented and intelligent and have so many resources, and like we have to win.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that is the one issue that could totally destroy this community. I believe that as well.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, the epicenter.
Yeah, it's so important. I also am really, one of the reasons we moved here for me is the local food movement, and I'm just so inspired to be part of a community that takes food so seriously.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too when I came here. I've been here for about 13 years.
Yeah, it's really terrific. And it feels like a very visionary community that people are being creative and sort of really leading the rest of the country on some of these things. You don't see this on other places as much. It's happening everywhere, but
if you're just joining us, my guest is poet Melissa Tuckey. We're talking about her book, Tenuous Chapel. Now, I want to get you to read another piece from that. This one's called Dying Grass Moon, and this one feels very personal.
Yeah, thank you. This one is inspired by an aunt who passed away and the family experience of being there. But I was also thinking about how do you deal with the grief of extinction and loss, you know, on a larger level, and how do you deal with that on a personal level in your own life? And so just a poem looking at things like that. Dying Grass Moon. A great aunt, her eyes sinking, a hospital bed. Uncle asleep in front of the television where we all die. I want to open a window. I've come to be fond of the air, to believe in the lungs, that they do what they do without thinking. The blue hills in sunlight, what mother saw as destitute, some rocks we made into a pantheon, cedar trees the wind blew down. With every breath, the world disappears more completely.
That's great.
Thanks.
And I love that. And I could tell that you get stirred by that too, right? Because it's personal.
It is personal, yeah. It brings back memories and
Is that harder for you to share personal stuff as a poet for a public that doesn't know you?
Not really. I'm pretty distanced even from these poems. Mm-hmm. There are some poems I've written that make me cry when I've written them. But mostly, you know, they're art, and, you know, even this is full of imagined things as well as a real experience.
Yeah. Did you show it to family members who might have known some of these people that you're talking about in these?
Yeah, so some of my family members I've shared these with. Some aren't interested, so, you know, some poems with family I'm worried, you know. Yeah, it's true, I feel cautious writing about family.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to just have my family rants or, you know.
I understand what you mean, yeah.
You know, I want to respect people and deal with them in their full...
And in poetry is also such a specific language. A lot of people don't know how to read it.
Right.
You know, they're waiting for their memoir.
Right.
And the narrative.
Yeah, it's true. And there's something freeing about that, too, that there are certain family members that aren't going to read it. So, yeah.
I tend to wait till people are dead.
Right, yeah.
Not always, but sometimes,
Definitely got things like that.
I want you to tell us a little bit about Split the Rock, because that sounds like such a fascinating... I don't know if you'd call it an organization or just an idea.
It's a nonprofit organization, and it's really wonderful, exciting. I became involved in it when I was living in Washington, D.C., and I was there during the build-up to the Iraq War and had moved there from Kentucky and Ohio and rural places and got there in the middle of this build-up for war.
Oh, yeah.
And I was lucky to meet a woman named Sarah Browning, who founded DC Poets Against the War, and I became involved in that. And she asked if I would coordinate that while she wanted to organize a national poetry festival. So I became involved. DC Poets Against the War was doing events all over the city in collaboration with activists. And it was a terrific way to connect poetry and activism.
Oh, yeah.
And then I became involved in the National Festival because that was a really exciting idea. And a group of us poets started meeting and getting together. And we wanted to be able to bring people who are against the war to D.C. to speak out. And there were constantly we were hearing from nationally known poets saying, I'm coming to D.C. Mm. What can I do? How can I connect with, you know? So we organized things like we had a march of poets. We had about 100 poets marching in one of the anti-war marches.
Wow.
And we carried poetry, which was, it was a very powerful experience. And people would stop and really study our signs, you know, and there were all those prefab signs and slogans. And
oh, yeah.
The poetry was doing something else. And I organized one of those protests and received poems from all over the world, Pakistan, Iraq, Iran.
Wow.
People wanting us to carry their words.
That's amazing. That is really amazing. It seems to me you could do that for environmental issues here.
Right, absolutely.
We could all be marching with poems about the beauty of the world that we could destroy.
Right. It was stunning, really, and a really interesting way to think about what is poetry? Mm-hmm. How is it different than political speech, and why does it matter? And so out of that came this festival. We invited all of our favorite poets to Washington, D.C. for a festival. And we kind of did it randomly, thinking, well, we don't have any money, so who will come? And 27 poets said yes. You know, and these are nationally acclaimed, famous poets. And we had 2 years to figure out how to raise the money to pay their travel and put them up and organize a festival. And the festival was 4 days, and it had concurrent panel discussions. People came from all across the country.
And do you think it made an effect on what was happening politically?
I don't think it made a political effect, but it definitely has made an effect in the poetry world.
Mm.
We're one of the most diverse poetry festivals in the country, and culturally diverse and stylistically diverse and geographically diverse.
And is it still happening?
And it happens every 2 years. We've had three festivals And we're getting ready. Our next one is in March of 2014.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm glad we were able to share that with people. Wow.
Yeah, I'll be going, and it's worth the drive. It's 4 days. It's in the middle of D.C., so it's part of the community there. It's not, just going to see the monuments, though you can do that, too.
So you being here as a local person will be able to get some PR out about that. That is terrific.
Yeah, I'd love to take people there. It's very powerful for poets and non-poets because it's 4 days of truth speaking.
Yeah, that is fascinating to me. Now, before we run out of time, I do want to have you read another poem from Tenuous Chapel. This one's called Return.
Return.
Yeah.
Return. Nothing tangible remains, yet you can still see the two mirrors you stood between as a girl trying to glimpse eternity. Grandmother's face creams and potions, her books about health and Jesus, Grandpa's work boots on the basement stairway, cigarette smoke hanging at 3 feet. Smell of all-day coffee, pastries and sugars Grandma shouldn't eat. Kids tramping the wooden stairs, the circle between rooms. Purple violets in the eastern window. His eyes always full after she passed. And what is left? A house with indoor plumbing. A chart on the wall for Grandpa's weight. A man like that is disappearing from this world. The rooms, too, are disappearing. You might have entered were it not for the world waking.
Oh, I love that one.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful one. Can you tell us a little bit about where that came from?
That came from memories of my grandparents' house in Illinois, just a little working-class house, and very simple. They didn't have a lot of money. It never changed. It was just this place that was so them and reliable. And when my grandfather passed away, I took pictures of the house to try to remember all the little things.
Yeah.
And so it comes from just those memories.
Yeah. And then you try to remember it via a poem, too.
Yeah.
So much poetry does seem to be about memory and history and in the past.
Right.
Can you explain to me, do you go back to those places or are you trying to recreate them? Do you know?
I think it's both. Mm. I think having distance from your memories helps for poetry to they become, your memories change day to day, year to year, and become more sparkly and dramatic, and then poetry is a more intentional way of choosing what you remember and how you remember it, and even perhaps creating a kind of memory. And making sense of the memories.
I've had a lot of writers tell me that they started writing to make sense of the world.
Yeah.
And then to try to get to know themselves.
Right, definitely. There's that experience and exploring memory.
I want to ask you, since you are fairly new in our community, how has living in this area affected your writing?
I love living here. I feel really lucky. I feel like it's a good place for writing. I feel like all the nourishment is there. There's healthy food, there's intellectual stimulation, there's a sensible community, so you don't have to spend all your time in despair.
And also the beauty, I must say.
Yeah, and there's a stunning beauty and the quiet, and the quiet of the landscape and the sweetness of it, and that we can see stars at night. I find all of those things really important.
So it has fed your writing. Has it made it go in a different direction? Do you think you will head more into a nature writing direction?
There's a lot of Ithaca already in my writing, I think, just the landscape. And nature is important to me. There's a lot of it in this book. But I just had the chance to take a lab of ornithology class this spring, and things like that, too. There's time to learn more about nature and learn more of the names of things and behavior of things.
But poets are very famous for naming things themselves.
Right, so we get to make things up and we can't remember. The landscape here is just beautiful, and it definitely feeds my work. I care a lot about nature and the natural world. But yeah. I also find the relationship between people and the natural world, you know, really an important source to think about and explore. And I think it's very interesting to hear all of the care that's taken towards the natural world and towards, you know, really thinking about our place in it as humans and our social relations, all of those things.
It does feel like this community has been thinking a lot about these issues, which surprised me, too.
Yeah, it's very... I mean, coming from Washington, D.C., I really needed to come here. So, I mean, we came here right after the summer, during the summer, after the BP spill, when all of that was happening. And I was so depressed, really. I think coming here was a choice to be around people who are doing positive things, because just listening to the news and looking around, in most places, you really don't have these positive examples.
Oh, yeah, it's horrifying. It's horrifying. I want to have you read one more poem from Tenuous Chapel. This one's called University Kiss in a Time of War. This one is very fascinating to me.
Thank you. Yeah, I wrote this here. University Kiss in a Time of War. Two slight young women, the smaller one reaches for hands, leans close to give a kiss to the taller girl, an in-between things kiss, a so long for now kiss, and nothing breaks. No alarms are sounded, no one is injured. Other students pass without comment or craning. But the giver of the kiss looks back, a quick glance over her shoulder, as if she's learned that kisses can be dangerous. I'm reminded of children who live on the border between wars, how farmers pay them to go to the rocky fields and find landmines. Small hands, mostly agile enough to keep the bombs from exploding. The farmers, hungry to return to their fields.
Yeah, that's so apropos now.
Thanks.
Yeah. So that seems like it was brought on by quite a few different issues.
Yeah, all together.
People have, trying to hide or being forced to hide who they are.
I feel when I look at this poem, I feel like it comes out of being. It does. I wrote this in Ithaca, and I feel like it comes out of Ithaca too, because it's looking at some really grim realities. But for me, there's still hope. Mm-hmm. In the poem, and really for me that hope comes from being involved in a community of people who are actively working for change.
We're almost out of time. Do you want to give some contact information?
Sure. I have a website, and you can contact me through the website. I would love to hear from people. The website is melissatucky.net, and that's melissatucky.net.
Great. So I hope people will get in touch with you. The book is really beautiful. Again, my guest has been poet Melissa Tucky. We're talking about her collection called Tenuous Chapel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's really nice to talk to you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.